He's in L.A.
President Trump weighed in on social media, and I'm quoting here, "I can't believe ABC fake news gave Jimmy Kimmel his show back. The White House was told by ABC that the show was canceled."
Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky appeared grateful after President Trump changed his longstanding position. The nation should give up some of its land to Russia to end the war.
"We expect America's actions to push Russia toward peace. Moscow fears America and always pays attention to it."
A hurricane warning as a Category 3 Gabriel races east across the Atlantic. CBS meteorologist Tony Sidiku.
It's got a rip current threat for some of the East Coast beaches today. It's on a weakening trend, but how about hurricane watches as it has its eyes set on the Azores?
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. People in Milwaukee still struggling after last month's flood can get help starting today at two new disaster recovery centers. One is at Wauwatosa City Hall, another at McNair School at 24th and Fairmount. The centers will assist people with applying for federal aid from FEMA and provide updates on their applications. They'll be open Monday through Thursday until 7 and Fridays and Saturdays until 5. Officials remind people that they can also apply online or by phone, but that the centers do give face-to-face assistance. It's part of a larger effort by city and county officials to support families impacted by the floods. Tiffany is in. The field for governor continues to get bigger. Now Tom Tiffany has announced he's running. Savannah Tolmy Olson has the details.
Tiffany announced his campaign in a video released yesterday.
"I'm Tom Tiffany, and I'm running for governor because I love our state. I will freeze property taxes, protect our farmland from communist China, and I'll preserve our Wisconsin values."
Tiffany is a former state lawmaker. He came into office in 2011 and was a prominent Republican voice during the Budget Repair Bill, or Act 10. In the Republican primary, Tiffany faces Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and businessman Bill Berrien. Democrats running include Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royes, State Representative Francesca Hong, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and Milwaukee businessman Ryan Sternad. Primaries are next August, and the general election will be the following November.
Buc-ee's construction could start this year. It's official. Buc-ee's is bringing their first Wisconsin location to Oak Creek. The city's planning commission signed off last night on the 73,000-square-foot gas station off I-94 just north of the Milwaukee-Racine County line. Buc-ee's has pledged to cover all road upgrades in the area. That's estimated to be at about $6 million. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
It's the Brewers and the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers and Padres wrapping up their series in San Diego. Last night, the crew shut out 7-0. Today, Chad Patrick gets the start. Quinn Priester's start moves to this weekend before their bye the first week of the playoffs. NFL, at age 27, Mecole Hardman was the oldest receiver in the Packers locker room.
I mean, it's a great room, man. Great competitive room. But yeah, like you say, you know, all of us trying to make plays, all of us trying to, you know, put our name out there. It's a young room as well.
Last night, Hardman got cut from the practice squad, replaced by a rookie out of UMass, Jacoby Keeney-James. The Packers getting ready to play the Cowboys in Dallas on Sunday Night Football after losing to the 0-2 Browns in Cleveland.
We're just trying to win one game at a time. If you're thinking or have your sights set on anything outside of that, I think you're focused on the wrong things. Like, we got to be focused in what the tape says and then moving on.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
The WAUK Text to Win contest, sponsored by Horizons Law Group, where they educate, collaborate, mediate, or litigate to serve you best. HorizonsLaw.com.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for today, a slight chance of a shower, and a high in the upper 60s to 70. More clouds around for tonight, again a slight shower chance. Lows in the upper 50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs in the low 70s. Currently 57 degrees.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Maggie Dawn.
Federal judges are speaking out against Donald Trump's attacks on the rule of law and the Supreme Court's evident complicity. Join us as we speak with former Judge John Tinder and former Judge Diane Wood.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
8:06 now on this Wednesday morning, September 24th. Nice to have you back here up north. On this Wednesday morning, Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot coming up in just a sec. We're going to be talking to Earl Ingram to find out who he's been talking to on the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast that you can get through Civic Media. Check out the website for more. We'll have Melissa Baldoff in just after 8:20 with our climate check. And then at 8:35, we will be talking about health insurance, especially the Affordable Care Act, which is made affordable. Those health insurance premiums are made more affordable by premium tax credits. They are tax credits that President Trump and congressional Republicans are in the process of killing, and Democrats are trying to restore, and that could lead to a government shutdown as early as the middle of next week. So we'll talk to Kathy Hempstead, a national health policy expert with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, about the impact of those tax credits on regular Americans just looking for some affordable health insurance. Again, that's coming up less than 30 minutes from now. But right now, let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot to talk about the weather and how yesterday, Brittany, when the sun finally came out and it was getting close to sunset, it was so tranquil on the water. Okay, looking out. And in fact, I'm gonna bring up the slide here for you to see. That's the view out my backyard there for folks watching on social media. See that little point of trees out there in the center, out in the distance? Well, out there yesterday, the sun was hitting it just right, and the water was so still. And you could see a perfect a mirrored reflection of the trees on the water. It was gorgeous. I get my phone up. I zoom in a lot. I've got this beautiful picture that I'm going to be taking. Here comes a jet ski right across.
Darn it.
Just like somebody took your Etch-A-Sketch and just decided to shake it up and go, you didn't need that mirrored water there anyway, did you? No, I guess I didn't. Thanks. Thanks anyway. So, but the weather was gorgeous for it. Apparently gorgeous enough for one jet skier to be out there on the water. And how are we looking for today in terms of, you know, gorgeousness?
Gorgeousness will be on the way, promise you. A little icky out there in spots, especially northwest this morning. A dense fog advisory in effect until 11 o'clock. But those winds are starting to pick up a little bit, so it's lifting ever so slowly, and it will reveal sunnier skies behind it, especially north. Down south, I think you're going to hang on to more cloud cover this afternoon, clearing later on in the day, but we're all going to get to abundant sunshine by tomorrow, and we're going to hold on to nothing but sunshine for the rest of the week and into the weekend as well. So some gorgeous weather with a high pressure system taking over, giving us, again, no rain in the forecast. So it will become a little bit breezy later today. We do have a beach hazard statement on Lake Michigan for Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha County. Waves are climbing up to 3 to 6 feet or so, and that lasts until tomorrow. So a little rough waters, few spotty sprinkles are possible by Lake Michigan later this afternoon and evening. And then high temperatures today hitting mid-60s to about 70 degrees. So slightly cooler before we get our warmer weather moving in tomorrow. So low to mid-70s by tomorrow afternoon. Sunny skies. We're going to hit the upper 70s for Friday and then tapping 80 degrees for a lot of us for the weekend and even into next week. So summery weather right here.
Or one could say gorgeousness is gorgeousness. On the way.
Yay.
That'll work. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Remember, you can sign up for our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the top banner. And I'm reminded by Ellie, our new newsletter editor, that she has a special edition of the newsletter coming out this Friday. Very fall festival focused. Oktoberfests and getting ready for Halloween and all kinds of sights. So you're looking for things to do on the weekends for a fall weekend in Wisconsin. Well, get signed up for this newsletter in time for the special edition on Friday. Again, upnorthnewswi.com. Earl Ingram's with us now from Civic Media. He's got the What's Going On podcast. I mean, such a range of topics that he covers in each installment. So head over to civicmedia.us, click on shows to learn more, and we're going to see what he's got in some of his latest editions here. Earl Ingram, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Good to chat with you. And I'm very interested in the topic that I think you're going to be bringing up here with one of your guests. Dr. Robert Craig was a guest. And it's a point that I think a lot of people miss when we're talking about the economy in this nation, jobs and manufacturing and everything else. And I mean, we are in an arc of history that I think too many people take for granted when it comes to where this country was at the end of the Second World War to, you know, where we went in terms of peaking and where we are right now. Tell us more about that conversation.
Well, you know, at 71 years old, I lived during those 60s, early 50s. I was born in 1954, and so the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, basically the sweet spot in my life, and I think in this nation, as the middle class, strong middle class that built suburbs and all sorts of other things and gave everybody, regardless of whether they had a college degree or not, an opportunity to live the American dream, really was kind of an illusion. And so we keep hearing people talk about getting back to a time that was a very short period of time in the history of this nation. That was during the late 1950s, 60s, and 70s, where industry was king and America was able to build everything that she needed. We didn't need any other nation. We only make up 4% of the global population, yet we produced everything that we needed inside of our borders. And so when you look at it from that perspective, great jobs and opportunities were available to people who couldn't read and write. It was the lifeblood of Black people who came here from the South seeking opportunities. They could come here, and many people couldn't read or write, but they were given opportunities to live middle-class lifestyles predicated on all of the industry that was going on in this country. And so the conversation I had with my good friend, Dr. Craig, centered around the fact that, you know, to hear people say that we're going to get back to that, I don't think they understand the history, the historical facts, and how we were able to do those things at that period of time.
Yeah. Now, look, this is not taking away from all the things that America and Americans could do during that period. But again, you got to keep in mind, much of the rest of the world was in ruins from a global war. And we were it for the economic, for the industrial engine for the longest time. And that's fine. We not only built everything, we built a middle class, the likes of which did not exist previously in human history. But far too many people took that for granted and forgot that, you know, the rest of the world was going to build up its infrastructure again, its manufacturing, and that, you know, U.S. companies would you know, outsource their jobs and things like that. And that, again, this is kind of a natural arc. And so when people say, oh, yeah, we're going to get back to those glory days. Well, no, not unless you're going to create all the rubble of a world war. So Now, Earl, less people think it's just a couple of old men rocking on the porch here grousing that the good old days ain't coming back. We're just setting the perspective for people so that when you look forward, you know, you're not essentially blowing smoke and romanticizing what it is we're going to get back to. We can make things better, but let's put our expectations in the here and now and not some era in the 50s and 60s that ain't coming back.
Well, so what predicated, and you're absolutely correct, what predicated the conversation that I had with Dr. Craig was in Milwaukee last week. A family of six, children ages 9 to 2 months, were found living in a storage facility. 1:30 in the morning, they heard whimpers coming from this storage facility. The police came, were able to somehow get into the storage facility and notice six children living in a facility with no lights, you know, no bathroom, no heat. And so the family, mother and father, were just outside in a car. They couldn't afford to find any place to live. And if you look at the realities of what people are faced with in this nation, for every 100 people looking for a place to rent, there's only 35 available. So the impacts of what has happened in this nation and what continues to happen are monumental. And I think that so many people aren't aware of the statistics that go along with what is taking place in this nation. If they did, if they really knew, they'd realize we're in a crisis that warrants political leaders from both sides of the spectrum to put aside certain things and not give major tax breaks to people who are always as wealthy as they are, while a large segment of this population is struggling.
And that is so on point, because people are going to want to right away just point fingers at that at those parents. And I'm not taking anything away from that, but the conditions that led people to that point. Why do we have conditions like this in the wealthiest nation ever, with wealth that is so concentrated in people who could not care less about those who are struggling to the point where they feel the need to live in cars and in storage sheds? And this is a time right now in this history of our country to figure out how do we fix that? How do we fix that inequality and still, well, I won't say still keep America strong. It'll frankly make America stronger if we address that wealth gap that we have in this country. And I'm sure Dr. Craig agrees with that.
Well, you know, Pat, I would say this. The real inherent danger in where we are is that since 2023, the number of homeless people rose 18% since 2023 in 2 years. And so from 670,000 to 780, those are the numbers that they can count, not counting the ones that we know aren't being counted. And so at that rate and where our economy is headed, those numbers are going to get even worse. And I maintain that family was not alone in living in those kinds of conditions. They are everywhere. And we've got to make an effort. We've got to make an effort to count them. They're American citizens, and they deserve a better opportunity in life.
Well, especially, yeah, if we're going to live any kind of a creed of a Judeo-Christian nation, for some folks, maybe live up to more of those parts of Scripture as well. It's the kind of thing that Robert Kennedy saw and tried to call attention to and tried to address, and instead we're watching Robert Kennedy Jr. do things that are just not going to help any of these folks at all. Learn more about this by catching Earl Ingram on the What's Going On podcast. Head over to civicmedia.us. Click on shows and look at all the episodes that Earl has been pushing out for us. A great public service for us all. Earl, thanks so much. Always appreciate the visit. Hope you have a great day.
You as well.
All right. Still ahead, we're going to have our climate check, and we're going to be talking about healthcare, the health insurance premium assistance that's provided to make healthcare more affordable, and why politicians are trying to kill it and potentially lead to a government shutdown next week. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Looking to give back to your community? Visit volunteerwisconsin.org to find volunteer opportunities near you. Join us in celebrating United Way's month by getting involved. Visit volunteerwisconsin.org or contact your local United Way today. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
My problem is I don't ever eat fish fries, so when I do it, I overdo it. I ordered a large perch, ate everything on my plate, and I felt like I wanted to die. And now I don't want to eat fish again, maybe ever.
I know it's a staple to get breaded fish, but if you don't get the bread on it, you know, you can kind of get away with eating more.
I'm not trying to gain weight for football here. I'm like, I just want to have a nice meal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Today, I'm very excited to introduce you to a friend of mine. His name is Charlie Nash, and he's the president and board chair of the Cream City Foundation in Milwaukee. And he joins me today to talk about their scholarship program, the people who applied, and what they do to invest in the community. But first, Charlie, please tell me a little history about the Cream City Foundation.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me on, Greg. I really appreciate this. So Cream City Foundation is the second oldest LGBTQ-focused foundation in the country, which is, I think, something that's really interesting when you look at the history of Wisconsin and Milwaukee, that we have that kind of caliber of support for the community as part of our history. Me personally, I have been involved with the Cream City Foundation since 2021, in which I joined the board, and I have been the president and board chair of the foundation since 2023. So it's been my pleasure to kind of continue to take that history and that legacy of Cream City Foundation, whose mission is to fund LGBTQ plus equity in Southeast Wisconsin, and help continue to evolve that vision and evolve that mission as we take on some of the newer, in fact, I think sometimes more insidious attacks that we've seen on the community over the past few years.
And you've made the announcement that you are making scholarships available, and I wanted you to talk about that. We saw the press release, but tell me what you do with the scholarships and how they are going to impact those who receive them.
When we think about scholarships, there's many aspects to our programming that we have. Scholarships is something that we started doing more in force around 2015. And it's been a really successful program because we feel like it has a unique impact upon our community in a few different ways. The first is the concept of capacity building. So when we think about how do we truly enable equity for LGBTQ plus people, it is for all LGBTQ plus people. And I think we need to recognize that educational outcomes, the burden of debt and financial burden that people come out with from education can vary quite a bit with underrepresented groups, people of color, transgender individuals that are often maybe facing many issues. And in a particular community, many people are working through high school and college in less stable home environments. And so that financial support for truly people to build the capacity, build the skills, so not only can they be successful in their lives economically, but also have the capacity to give back. That is something that we really believe, and it's important for us as a foundation to pay forward. So this year we were excited to announce, actually for the third year in a row, we've had a record high funding for our scholarship program. And so we funded 20 scholarships for a total of $50,000, so $2,500 to 20 incredible students in our area. And you know, our hope is that those students will continue to stay in our area, continue to invest and see that investment made in them, and invest that time and energy back in their community in their lifetimes, whether regardless of what field they choose.
I think that's a great way of putting it. You are investing in these individuals so they can give something back. That is the important thing, especially about keeping people in Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin. It's about growing the community, the entire community, and through these scholarships, I can see as that is a great way to invest in our younger folks. With 20 scholarships, it must be a wide swath of individuals in the community. Can you tell me more about the folks who applied and those who got it?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You think with 20 scholarships, we actually have every year about 80 or 90 individuals that apply. So it's a very difficult set of decisions to even whittle it down to 20 and the $50,000 that we do have to invest. So the need is great. And many times the things that are making the decisions are individuals that we see a distinct need for the scholarships, individuals that have as well a demonstrated ability and capacity and desire to give back, as what I mentioned before. That certainly is something that we want to help encourage with our scholarship awardees. And in fact, we have our business quality luncheon coming up, which is our really premier event every single year in which we celebrate business equity, equity of LGBTQ plus people in the business world. And it's also our opportunity to honor our scholarship recipients. And so it's an incredible opportunity to sort of see the various experiences, have them join that kind of forum and really see, okay, here's an organization that is striving to give back. Here's how they can get involved and engaged moving forward. So really exciting wide range of people that we see and want to continue to encourage participating in giving back to their community moving forward in all stripes, whether it's in the medical field, in things like history and art, or in many cases, things that may be seen as more, you know, trade related and very specific to their jobs and skills that they want to build as individuals.
This is great. I love hearing about these types of programs and giving back to the community. Charlie, if people want to know more about the scholarships going forward and just the Cream City Foundation, where do they want to go?
Right. Well, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Cream City Foundation. Otherwise, our website is creamcityfdn.org. And that's where you can find information about all of our programs, events, or even kind of when the next cycle of scholarships will come up.
Charlie Nash is the president and board chair of the Cream City Foundation. I really appreciate you coming onto the show today and talking about this wonderful program. And I look forward to talking to you very, very soon, my friend.
My pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Charlie Nash for being here to talk about the Cream City Foundation. And he will be back very soon to talk about another program that's coming out. So you want to stay tuned right here on WAUK and Civic Media. Again, if you want to find out more, go to creamcityfdn.org. And I also want to let you know that we officially have our own newsletter here at Civic Media, Civic Media Today. You can sign up by going to civicmediatoday.substack.com. That way you can get an overview on everything that's happening around the network from around the state, whether it's our podcasting, whether it's our shows, stories we're working on, go to civicmediatoday.substack.com, sign up for that free newsletter, and it will be delivered to your inbox every day.
You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUKradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. Have a wonderful Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:29.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
540 WAUK, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, and home to the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Freezing property taxes, protecting farmland from China, and bringing common sense back to politics. That's the pitch from Tom Tiffany in his announcement about running for governor. Tiffany, a former state lawmaker and current U.S. representative for much of western and northern Wisconsin, says he's ready to lead the whole state. Tiffany faces competition in the Republican primary from Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and businessman Bill Berrien. His critics question whether his federal experience prepares him for running a state. The weather might not be right, but a warning is still out for the lake. A high swim risk is expected at Lake Michigan beaches in Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha. The advisory runs this afternoon through tomorrow morning, with waves hitting up to 5 feet. Senator Tammy Baldwin is meeting local folks in Milwaukee today to talk about what could happen if Republicans drop affordable care tax breaks. If that happens, Baldwin says premiums for 300,000 Wisconsinites could jump as much as 35%. Her statement says 30,000 might lose their health care altogether. Baldwin's pushing a bill to make the tax credits permanent to protect people's health and wallets. Republicans argue that the tax credits are costly and that the focus should be on lowering overall health care costs instead. Some elected officials want more security in the Capitol. The Assembly Speaker has another idea. Assembly Speaker and Racine County Representative Robin Voss says lawmakers might soon be able to use state funds for home security systems following recent threats against officials. He says the Capitol is safe thanks to state Capitol Police and doesn't need to become a heavily fortified building. Voss pointed to recent violence that took place at homes and college campuses, arguing that adding metal detectors or armed guards at the Capitol wouldn't solve the problem. Voss says he supports measures like panic alarms or cameras for lawmakers' homes. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Making movies seems like a pretty good gig. Believe it or not, there are people who whine and moan about it, according to wrestler-turned-actor David Bautista. He told GQ he is getting older and more choosy about projects and says, quote, "I want to work with people I just love and respect because I love this business. I love filmmaking and the art, and if people don't want to be there, I don't want to be there with them." This was obviously before reviews for his new film, Afterburn, came out. If you're looking for something to rent that you might have forgotten about or never got around to seeing, check out a film that's climbing the HBO charts. 2011's The Sitter is more or less a remake of the Elizabeth Shue 80s comedy Adventures in Babysitting, albeit a more foul-mouthed and raunchy one. Jonah Hill and Sam Rockwell star in the film that critics say might be worth a revisit. If you're wondering why it was forgotten about, it could be because it received a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it does have Sam Rockwell. It's worth checking out, as sometimes history is kind to comedies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The 540 WAUK Text to Win contest is sponsored by Pickleball Kingdom, just a half mile north of Silver Spring Drive off Pilgrim Road, Menominee Falls.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for today, a slight chance of a shower, and a high in the upper 60s to 70. More clouds around for tonight, again a slight shower chance. Lows in the upper 50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs in the low 70s. Currently 57 degrees.
Everyone's playing pickleball, and Pickleball Kingdom in Menominee Falls is where it's at.
This is Donald Driver. Listen up. You'll never know who you'll see.
With 17 pro courts, there's no waiting around. Court times that fit your schedule, plus an impressive pro shop, event space, full locker rooms with showers, and a bar with big screens. Or catch the action live. Just a half mile north of Silver Spring Drive off Pilgrim Road. Follow Pickleball Kingdom on Instagram or Facebook. Pickleball Kingdom, Menominee Falls.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, it is a huge export in Wisconsin you might not even be aware of. We are talking to the Cranberry Growers Association as we go beyond the cheese.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Hey, just a reminder, I sit here from 6 until 9 a.m. weekday mornings. You don't have to. We'd love to have you along for the full 3 hours, 5 days a week. If you can't, well, all the more reason to pod this little program. Head over to Spotify and follow our show, or do so at Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And that way you never miss a guest, you never miss an update, you never miss a quip. And that includes topics like healthcare. And we're going to discuss that right now with our guest, Catherine Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We're going to talk about, you always hear us talking about, you know, the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare kind of at this very overarching umbrella of healthcare, et cetera. We're going to get into kind of the nitty gritty of it. What is it that makes it more affordable? And why is that a bit of a political football lately as we talk about, you know, the federal budget and things like that? Catherine Hempstead, good morning. Nice to have you here again.
Hi, Pat. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. And for telling us more, we're going to get into specifically these healthcare tax credits. It's tax credits that really kind of put the affordable in the Affordable Care Act. So why don't we kind of go back to when the earth cooled here and explain how these tax credits, how these subsidies, how they are essentially are the foundation of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. That's a great question. The Affordable Care Act was designed to help fill a really important gap in our healthcare system, which was to provide affordable coverage to people who didn't get an offer from their employer, weren't old enough for Medicare, didn't have low enough income for Medicaid. So they sort of updated, improved, re-regulated the individual market and required insurers to accept everyone, no underwriting for medical conditions, rating only for age. And the, you know, to make that actually work for people, to make the coverage be affordable, they also included this set of tax credits that were based on income. And it, you know, it was an amazing accomplishment and filled a really important gap, but there was definitely the perception that the tax credits were not sufficient to make coverage as affordable as people wanted. So for example, when you reached 400% of the poverty level, which is only about $62,000 annual income for a person, so it's you know, not a very high income, you actually would hit what people call the subsidy cliff. You wouldn't get any tax credit at all. So coverage was really unaffordable for people at that income level and over. And for people with really low income, there was also the perception that the tax credits were not really sufficient and a lot of people were not taking the offer of coverage. So in 2021, they enhanced the tax credits. They made them more generous and they also eliminated that subsidy cliff and just had a cap of a percent of income that you would be required to spend on premiums, so that that kind of smoothed that top part of the income distribution and made the coverage a lot more affordable for people at the lower end of the income distribution. And as a result, in every state in the country, enrollment really soared. Like, for example, in Wisconsin, you went from close to 200,000 people in 2020 to about 313,000 in 2025. So that's like a 50% bump up in your enrollment in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. And those kinds of results were seen all over the country, and enrollment in the marketplace soared to like 24 million. But the reason I'm on the show today and the reason we're talking about it is that those enhanced credits are set to expire at the end of this year, unless Congress takes action. And, you know, as you probably know, open enrollment is going to start soon for the 2026 plan year. And that plan year is going to reflect the end of those tax credits unless something happens.
So you had those expiring, and then to add insult to injury, you had the massive cuts to Medicaid and other things that made life more affordable for Americans in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. And now it comes time to pass a new federal budget for the new fiscal year. Republicans most likely need Democratic votes in order to pass that. And Democrats are saying, well, in return for our vote, here are some things that we would like to see restored or extended. And so when you look at what they're talking about, I don't know if I should ask best case scenario or the most realistic good scenario that could happen between now and next week that would be beneficial to most Americans in keeping their health care affordable. Is it just focusing on those enhanced tax credits and restoring those?
I think that's the most feasible thing that's on the table right now. You did mention some other like looming threats to coverage that are going to impact people in the Medicaid program, you know, work requirements and some really important changes that affect how states are able to finance the program and pay providers. And there are, you know, lots and lots of concerns about what those things are going to do to coverage. And in fact, you know, CBO has estimated kind of all in maybe 15 million Americans are going to become uninsured over the next 10 years, which is something like a 50% increase in the size of the uninsured population. So it's a massive assault on health insurance coverage, you know, when you look at all the pieces. But I think the thing that is, you know, closest to really, you know, hitting the road and being enacted is this situation with the enhanced premium tax credits. And that's what people are trying to incorporate into, you know, budget discussions in Congress. And certainly there have been talks about a permanent extension. There have been talks about a one-year extension. There have been talks about a two-year extension. I mean, right now, unfortunately, the parties are not talking to each other at all, it seems. At least that's what the public face of it is. So it's very, very difficult to you know, suss out what might be happening.
Our guest is Catherine Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're talking about the enhanced tax credits that helped folks afford health insurance through the Affordable Care Act and them expiring or potentially being extended. And I like the point that you made that there's talk about making them permanent or maybe for another year or two. Obviously, what was approved in 2021 is expiring now. Why was it set up that way? Because like in all things, politics is the art of the possible. And there were plenty of people in 2021 who figured that by 2025, they would see how many more people are being helped by those enhanced tax credits, how much more affordable health insurance has become for more Americans, and that they would then see that and want to make it permanent. Obviously, that's not what we're seeing proposed by the Trump administration or by congressional Republicans. But Catherine, there's no shortage of either anecdotes or mentions in news stories that there are individual Republican members of Congress who have indicated they would be open to extending or maybe even making permanent the enhanced tax credits because they understand the help. They also understand the harm going into an election year of saying that these credits were allowed to expire. But I'm wondering if you get the same sense that there are more than zero, you know, individual Republicans in Congress who might be amenable to extending these healthcare tax credits and avoiding a shutdown next year.
I think that's definitely right. And there have been a number of individual members who have said they're open to talking about it. There's been some proposals from Republicans, you know, of maybe a one or a 2 year extension. So I think you're right. And the truth is that states that voted Republican are really, in general, as a rule, have disproportionately higher use of the ACA marketplace, especially some of the states that haven't expanded Medicaid, which I know is partially true in Wisconsin, but states like Texas and Florida are really dependent on the marketplace, and they're going to see massive disruptions and coverage loss if these tax credits go away. So I think there's a lot of concern in you know, all members of Congress, but I think especially a lot of Republican members, that their constituents are going to experience really massive sticker shock when they start to see what they're going to be asked to pay for coverage. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to drop coverage, and that's going to create a spiral of bad consequences for individuals, for hospitals, healthcare providers, you know, everybody. So I do agree with you that there is a lot of interest from some individual members, Republicans and certainly Democrats, in trying to come to an agreement.
We were talking in the last hour about a New York Times article that cited Republicans who were pointing to the cost of all of these enhanced tax credits and citing that big price tag as a reason to oppose their renewal. But what was missing from there was the comparison, the contrast with what's the cost if suddenly all of those people can't afford their health insurance anymore, either have to pay a lot more and decide to drop it, or just are no longer eligible. And I don't know that that's a number you have at your fingertips. But again, I would imagine the cost of extending these tax credits probably pales in comparison to the long range cost of having that many more million Americans go back to being uninsured.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's also worth noting that, you know, this is the only tax credit that didn't get extended, you know. So when you think about what was in the reconciliation bill, which included a lot of extensions of tax credits and then some really drastic cuts, historic cuts to the Medicaid program, and then you see this, it seems like there's a real concerted effort to undermine health insurance coverage in recent policy. And to your point, yes, it costs money to cover people, but it's also very costly when people aren't covered, because you see people neglect symptoms because they are terrified of having medical debt or not knowing what they might be asked to pay if they go into the hospital or clinic and they don't have coverage. So people neglect symptoms until they're much more serious. Then they show up in more expensive settings like emergency rooms. And unfortunately, sometimes it's too late for things to be treated. And there have been a lot of great studies of the health benefits of expanding coverage. And unfortunately, we kind of know what's going to happen when you throw that process into reverse, which is something that I think we're really looking at in this country from a multiple set of sources. And then you also see, you know, the consequence on the healthcare system when people lose customers that can come in and pay for preventive care or for elective surgery or for things that improve the quality of their life, but they won't do if they don't have coverage. Then you see some hospitals, especially in rural areas, becoming very financially stressed, maybe having to lay people off, maybe having to eliminate certain specialties. And then that has a spillover effect on the health and access to healthcare for the entire community, especially in rural areas when there may not be a lot of healthcare systems. So you're right, there is a real negative ripple effect when people lose coverage. And it's also not just people's health and not just the healthcare system, but health insurance coverage is a really important form of financial protection. So when people go into debt or people have big medical bills to pay, they stop paying other bills. They may not pay their rent. They may not pay their credit card bills. And so you see a sort of a downward spiral in people's financial well-being too. So it's extremely costly to not cover people.
Catherine Hempstead is with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, helping explain this very important part of keeping affordable in the Affordable Care Act and some of the background on what may lead to a government shutdown fight next year, or next week rather, when Congress is back in session. Catherine, thank you again. It's always great to get background from you. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Pleasure.
All right. Yep. Take care now. All right, some final news and notes from Lake Wasota coming up here. And again, a reminder, tomorrow we'll have some of our regular Thursday guests here. That'll include Joe Zepecki. It'll include Sean O'Malley talking about your money and the markets as well. All that ahead. For more information, of course, you can always head to civicmedia.us. Click shows to learn more. Look for our back issues of shows or subscribe to us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Back in just a bit. You're up, Norton.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on 540 WAUK. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize.
$200 cash and gold jewelry.
And be entered to win our grand prize.
Two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota.
Download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. Complete rules at civicmedia.us. Sponsored in part by Pickleball Kingdom, a half mile north of Silver Spring off Pilgrim, Menominee Falls.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We don't always agree politically, but Bill McCosh.
Thanks for having me. You want to talk Brewers first?
It's been a really special season, and it's not whether you're wearing red or blue hats. It's yellow and blue.
How do you come together in politics? This is one of the ways. Yeah. Find some common ground and then expand on that. And right. Then you got to listen to the other side.
Our neighbors are not our enemies. We can disagree politically, but still find ways to bring our community together.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, why throw your hat in the ring to become governor, especially in times like this?
Folks are tired of politicians who focus on cultural and partisan issues versus delivering real results that's going to change lives. And that's what we've done in Milwaukee County. And so my calling is being able to be there for people at my best when people are dealing with their worst times. And as elected officials, as community leaders, that's what we should be focused on.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
So now you have some of the background on the potential government shutdown next week. Again, Congress is off all this week. They'll have Monday and Tuesday of next week to figure out something. Otherwise, Tuesday night at midnight, if there's no deal or a continuing resolution to kick the can down the road, there'll be a government shutdown, which is really unfortunate because there are a lot of other things going on right now. Not the least of which you've heard me talk about before is, you know, what's going to happen with a lot of Wisconsin farmers and their crops, especially their soybeans. But anyway, our question of the week is, who does get blamed for a government shutdown if it happens? Is it Republicans in Congress, Democrats in Congress, or President Trump? And if you want to be first to see our question of the week on Sunday mornings, then head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner, and get on board our newsletters. But back to the soybean problem for a bit. I noticed that the national political site Axios is taking note of, shall we say, some nervousness in Iowa, where they have a soybean market of nearly $6 billion a year. And again, not only has China not purchased any soybeans at all from the U.S. this year because of Donald Trump's tariffs and trade war, but this week we learned about a surprise deal with Argentina. China rarely buys anything from Argentina, but now they're going to be getting soybeans from Argentina and Brazil, and at the moment, none from the U.S. Even if Congress and the president wanted to try to buy off farmers with some kind of bailout payments, well, two things. First, it would only add to the debt and the deficit, which they don't seem to have a problem with because they did it during Trump's first term. But second, if there's a shutdown, they can't even get around to doing that because they're busy squabbling about the overall budget itself. They're fighting about the extended healthcare premium supports that we just talked about in our last segment. And so many other things that there are to think about. And yet all we've got going right now is a potential shutdown and a potential trade war. I see that a little bit ago, congressional candidate Rebecca Cook put out a press release urging that Congress and the president exempt soybeans from tariffs in order to protect Wisconsin farmers. She says soybeans represent a $1.3 billion industry in our state. These tariffs are hurting farmers across Wisconsin. The price of a bushel of soybeans has dropped from $15 a bushel 3 years ago to as low as $10 per bushel today. And that is a direct result of tariffs that are driving down demand and the supply chain disruptions that come from it. And Rebecca Cook says, this is an existential crisis for our family farms, our regional economy, and our way of life. It's why I'm calling on President Trump to exempt soybeans from his tariffs and save Wisconsin farmers from further financial pain. There is somebody who has sat on the House Agriculture Committee who could be a leading voice on that, and that would be Derek Van Orden. And yet, as I'm looking to see if there's anything, if you do just a simple search on Derek Van Orden and soybeans, no, no, there's nothing there. There may have been a quote here or there, but in terms of any actual leadership, none whatsoever. And here is somebody who promised to be an independent voice representing the 3rd Congressional District. It's something that we had in Republican Steve Gunderson for many years, especially when it came to dairy prices and fighting for all the dairy farmers in the 3rd Congressional District in Western Wisconsin. It was something that Democrat Ron Kind fought for as well, to represent all of the farms in the 3rd Congressional District. The 3rd Congressional District is used to sending moderates. Steve Gunderson was a moderate Republican, Ron Kind, a moderate Democrat. Derek Van Orden billed himself initially as this kindly grandfather who served in the military and would continue to be that voice for everyone in the 3rd District. And instead, he's in the Washington Post today, but he's in the Washington Post for all the wrong reasons, for trying to cut all federal funding to the city of Eau Claire because of what some people posted on social media, and cut funding to all of the city of Ellsworth because of what somebody put on social media, and funding to the entire Mayo Clinic because of what somebody put on social media. If you missed it earlier, Derek Van Orden actually jumped in our comment sections at Up North News. We put up a post a few days ago about these threats to our First Amendment freedoms that he's been making, and pointing out the harm that does, and that it doesn't really comport with somebody who should be fighting on the side of freedom of expression. And he jumped in the comment sections to say that not all speech is protected speech, and to cite a particular federal statute as proof of that. But that statute doesn't say what he thinks that it says. And so rather he was just rather rambling and looking for ways to justify making threats against his own constituents and communities in his district. And I, as much as we are flattered that a sitting member of Congress wants to get into our comment section, we really wish he'd get off social media entirely and show some leadership on things like helping farmers whose soybeans are going to go nowhere and the prices that are only going to continue to go down in the meantime. But of course, he's getting into his example from the president of the United States, who we didn't even have time this morning to get into his rambling speech to the United Nations. It was full of false claims and contradictions. And again, he's literally campaigning for a Nobel Peace Prize while he's sending troops into cities within the United States of America. So much to continue talking about. We'll do more tomorrow morning, and of course more throughout the day here on the Civic Media Radio Network, including your next chance to win in the Go for the Green and Gold Text Win Contest. The next keyword is quite literally minutes away with Jane and Greg from Matt and Air on Air. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News. We'll see you back here bright and early tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News special report. We got word from Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem about a half an hour ago. Three people have been shot at an ICE detention facility in Dallas. Police there just confirming one victim is dead at the scene. The agency's acting director, Todd Lyons, on CNN.
You know, it could be employees, it could be civilians that were visiting facility, it could be detainees. At this point, we're still working through that. We do know that three have definitely been shot. They're en route to the hospital right now.
Again, one dead. Lyons says the shooter died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. CBS News Texas reporter J.D. Miles is at the scene.
This is an office where a lot of activity based on these mass deportations that have taken place over the last 8 months.